there's your watch, Bobby.
Okay.
He was trying to figure out how there's not a clock in this room for some odd reason.
Oh, and thank you. All right.
There you go. And I'm going to turn you loose. I think you are on.
I just press record then?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's already, I think it's pressed, yeah.
Okay.
The red light's on.
Good deal.
Let me double check that.
Go for it, guy.
Yeah. All right. I'll just introduce myself for the record. So this is Robert Griffith, and this is November 9th, a Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and I'm interviewing Jim Wise, a Drake alum. I want to thank you for coming today to interview.
My pleasure.
So I think we'll start off. Can you tell me a little bit about where you were born, where you grew up?
Well, I was born in Whiteside County, Illinois, the town of Sterling, and my parents had lived in this little town of DeWitt, Iowa, but Sterling had the facilities to receive my mother's birth. And but when I was two, we moved to Des Moines, and we moved to a large Victorian home just two blocks north of the Drake campus at 25th and Clark. And that's where I grew up. I went to Kirkwood Elementary School in that neighborhood, which has now been torn down. And I went to Washington Irving Junior High at that time, which has been torn down. And I went to the old North High School, which has been converted to a K-8 school, and then the new North High has been built. So that's so I grew up in the Drake neighborhood and became closely associated with Drake as a youth.
Okay. And so you said you attended North High School. And then what made you decide upon Drake for college after high school?
I guess it was a no-brainer. It was my school. I guess I had a love affair with Drake University as a kid. I followed their football teams and their basketball teams in the old field house. I played sandlot ball on the campus. Our friends, back just north of the Coles Library, was an open field. And when I was a kid, and the kids that lived south of university, mm-hmm. and the kids that lived north of university met at the Drake campus, and we played football and other mundane things the kids do. So,
right.
But that's so that we should, that's, I established then a during that growing up time a feeling of being part of the university, mm-hmm. and because it was part of our neighborhood. And in fact, as I was walking the campus, I couldn't help but think about the old science hall that's been torn down, and we used to stop and look in the windows and see the big bottles of specimens, and we gawk and wonder what are those strange looking things, you know. But so that then during the graduation times, and usually at that time, the major graduation courses in the spring, and the graduation ceremonies were held at the church across the street, which was known as University Christian Church at that time. And I used to come up in the mornings of graduation and sit on the campus bench and watch the faculty parade from Old Main down past the large oak trees and down to university, and the police would be there stopping the traffic to let these professors who were gowned in their regalia and their hats and colors, and I just thought that was a delight to watch them do that. So those kinds of experience and developed an affinity for and a support of the university, which lives still today.
Going into Drake, did you have any like career aspirations? What was your major? What were you looking to do, you know, as your profession?
Well, I was 17 when I enrolled at Drake. I was too young. I floundered through my first year at Drake. Then Uncle Sam came calling for the Army. And I didn't want to be drafted, so I enlisted in the Army then for 18 months. I spent 8 months in the States and 10 months in Japan. My period of service was right after the war and in the occupation of Japan. So, but then I came back, I was on the GI Bill, and I picked up going to school. And when I first started, I was 17, the first veterans of World War II were returning. And these are guys 23, 25, 27 years of age. They'd seen the world and had this Sam Hill knocked out of them. And here I was, a 17-year-old kid, taking accounting and taking business law and taking all those things that they relished and I labored through. And but all this happened help me then mature and become more prepared for collegiate life. One thing it was, but just before before I first entered the university, I well remember the trailer court down in 27th and Forest, across from the west end of the Drake Stadium. And during that time, they had Drake had cadets during the war, and they lived there, and they went through their drills and all that. And I was in high school, and I'd go down and watch them. But in that whole period was a developmental period for me and my neighborhood and my friends and my association with Drake. It just those things just expanded my appreciation of the university. But when I first started at Drake as a freshman, I had great dreams of being this corporate lawyer. That was my I don't think high school kids today dream like that. I think that you're more disciplined. You have to be pretty focused to meet your college goals today, much more than I did. And but a year and a half in the Army and provided a time for me to mature and grow and appreciate the opportunities that lay there ahead of me. So I cashed in on the GI Bill, when I came back, I entered the School of Education. Our family had a history of teachers, and so I thought I would, because of the experience I had in the business college when I was a 17-year-old, and then I thought I'd, as a 21-year-old, I could try something different. And I did that and continued and went through 4 years of the university and in a different manner entirely than what it was my first year. And went on and got a bachelor's as well as a master's degree. And I have a BSE, Bachelor in Science and Education, and an MSE, Master of Science in Education from from Drake. So,
And you did mention, what about the trailers? In 1950, I saw that there's a fire at one of the trailers with a couple. Do you remember anything about that?
No, I can't give you any details on it at all, but I know that they were close, they were small.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1950, I was on the concluding end of my university experience mm-hmm. at Drake. I remember there was a fire, and at that time, you know, those Drake took over the trailer court, and they rented the trailers to married students.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, even though I did marry in 1949, which was the same year that I graduated from with my no no, it was a year before I graduated. I graduated in 50 with my bachelor's, and but at that time, with the wedding plans coming up, I was not very social minded. I was really focused on class, focused on work, focused on getting money. So, because we were going to get married in the next year, and we were broke, and so I carried a heavy class load, and I continued. I worked two jobs, afternoons and evenings at a drugstore, and Saturdays. I worked for my dad hauling coal and shoveling grain. So I did that for 5 years.
And were you were the brother of the Alpha Tau Omega fraternity, is
mm-hmm.
that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell a little bit about that experience?
Yeah. Again, when I joined Alpha Tau Omega, and when I got back, and I guess it was in the spring of 1947, and it was probably the spring of the January, the spring semester of 48, not 47, and I joined it at that because of, I think the draw was my brother-in-law was already a member there. I had a lot of friends there. Also had a lot of friends in SilGulf. SAE, and so it was kind of, and I had a bid from both, and I chose Alpha Tau Omega probably because of my brother-in-law. The first semester I was there in 48, I was, at that time, freshmen had to wear beanies. At that time, hazing was part of the thing. Paddles were used, grabbed your ankles and you got it, you know, if you didn't measure up. Discipline. But coming out of the Army into that kind of a thing, and most of the people who were in there were GIs, they weren't going to be intimidated by a bunch of kid stuff. And so I didn't have to go through the rigors that the kids prior to the war had to go through. And that was the beginning of the waning of hazing mm-hmm. and so forth. We still had paddles and we made them, but we gave them as gifts to our sons and as mementos. We usually hung them on the wall for a while, and then they were filed appropriately. And it was a good experience. I learned a lot of etiquette. There was a chapter meeting every Monday night. Come hell or high water, you're going to be there. There's a dinner. You're going to dress. You'll have a white starched shirt, a tie. You'll have a coat, and pressed slacks, shine shoes. We would go and we'd sit all at a large table together, and we would practice the etiquette that we are supposed to where we would apply the etiquette that we were supposed to do, and we would, you know, you receive with your right, pass with your left. You sit straight, keep your butt back to the back of the chair, and it was, and if it wasn't, you were chastised. You were corrected. There's a proper way. We had house mother, Mother Ketchum. House mothers in those days were the boss in the house. There was no screwing around. I mean, the fraternity days were, we'd have house parties. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, somebody would try to slip something through something, you know, and my wife, my girlfriend at that time, but current wife, or my only wife. I say current wife, that means. But she wouldn't drink. She had the taste of a glass of beer or swallow beer. She sips a glass of wine on occasion. But they'd bring her gin and tonics, and they'd bring her other unknown Greek. And she'd say, "Oh, thank you." And she'd hold it for a little while, and the guys, and then she'd just take it over and set it on this windowsill or someplace, you know. And we'd go on over someplace else, and never yet to this day has she touched hard liquor or beer. But anyway, those experiences at that time were really beneficial. And I think I came at the right time because the president of the fraternity, or the and the worthy master and the exchequer, and they were all veterans, and they were in for business. They weren't here to mess around. Mm-hmm. And consequently, I was a veteran too, but I was a young veteran. They were old, more mature veterans, and I just rode their wave. And but we had chapter meetings every Monday night. Then after that, it was kind of a social time, and there was sometimes, so yeah, then we would all go down to have a glass of beer together or something at Tony's Grand Tavern down in Cottage Grove, which Cottage Grove and MLK and Cottage Grove used to be, mm-hmm, two streets, one going north and south, one going east and west. Today it's a big intersection, you know. But it was, we would all have the DGs and the Kappas and the Delta Zetas, and they were all there, and that'd last maybe an hour and a half at the most. And so, but I left fraternity. I went inactive when I, after the 1 year of active, I was a pledge, then inactive for a year, and then I went inactive because I had to work. And I took, my class load went up, and then I got married, and there just wasn't time for that at all. So, but all in all, the experience with as a fraternity member was very good.
I guess back to academics. Did you remember any professors that you liked, disliked, anything in particular there?
Oh, I sure do. My first year, that was a tough year. There was a young veteran professor by the name of Lapp, L-A-P-P, taught economics, and I was taking his class, and I just fell in love with that guy because he knew how to kick me in gear to get the information he wanted to share, and I understood it, and so it was really and I don't remember his first name. I know that he left here within maybe a couple years and went on to another institution, I believe. But Dr. Deli was here, and Eli Zube. They were all part of the actuary department that is no longer here. That actuary department was bought away by, at least I call it bought away by Wake Forest. What school is at Wake Forest?
There's a school, Wake Forest.
Yeah, with Wake Forest in North Carolina.
So, okay.
Yeah, and they went down there and formed their actuary department. But I remember that so well. Dr. Deli was a was an accounting professor, and Larry Zube was a friend and a neighbor. Also in my education classes, I had a professor also that first year that was just, I couldn't understand. His name was Green. I don't know him from backwards, but he was teaching a new style of English, and there wasn't grammar, and it wasn't composition, and it wasn't literature, but it was, if the tree falls in the forest and nobody's there, does it make noise? Hell yes, it makes noise. Well, how do you know it makes noise? Well, that's the kind of rhetoric he was laying on me as a 17-year-old. I wasn't able to handle that. But I went on to get into the College of Education. There was Stuart Tiedemann, Hazel Wheatley, Bess Ham. I remember Dean of the Liberal Arts College, Dr. Stalnecker. And they have the Stalnecker Lecture Series, you know, that in his honor. And I just, what a prized gentleman he was, since I really looked up to him. It seems to me that academicians really impressed me. I liked, I was impressed in, with their knowledge base and their achievements. And I really think that by being surrounded with those kind of people motivated me to go further in my education, to finish a doctorate degree myself. But the staff at Drake, my first year, I was really embarrassed when I started, because my father had made arrangements to pay the tuition for a semester in half. I mean, half a semester to crack. And so when I went up and I gave him a check for $37.50 for the first half of the first semester in 1945. And then I had to carry another $37.50 check at the beginning of the second half of the first semester. And no, my friends didn't have to do that, but I did. And so I wasn't comfortable with that, but I was very appreciative that he was able to pay it. But $75 a semester, $150 a year. And you're shaking your head, and you should, because you can't fathom that. But that's when a nickel bought a lot of stuff. So it was. So anyway, I think the professors just really impacted me, probably much more than I ever realized. It's just, in retrospect, it's just, they were very, very good and very important. They guided me through experiences that I needed guiding through. They encouraged me they cautioned me in other ways. They molded my thinking, and they developed a sincere, in-depth appreciation for teaching and learning. So,
yeah. Do you remember any, I guess, of your close friendships with any other students? Do you carry those on today, or a little bit about friends you made throughout your experience at Drake?
Yes, they did. They carried on for a while, and then they began to wane. Mm-hmm. Drake at that time, and still does today, gets a lot of kids from Illinois and a lot of kids from St. Louis area. A lot of my fraternity brothers that I became good friends with came from Joliet, Illinois. When Joliet was a town instead of a suburb. And also had good friends from Webster Grove, Missouri, just outside of St. Louis. But so those, and we had, and then But the friends that I had also and that we maintained over the years were people that were our neighbors or high school chums, or I went to North, they went to Roosevelt, but we both attended University Church. Bob Ray was SAE at that time, Governor Ray, who was a beloved leader of our state and president of this university as an interim basis for a period, and mayor in this city for an interim basis. We were together, but that all sprouted because he was part of the group that gathered on the Drake campus to play Sandlot football and base softball. Those friendships like that linger and grew and are cherished today. And I think they were probably, they weren't formed at the university, but they were solidified at the university. And then we began to, our family got married, and our families had common experiences and common priorities. And we were both, everybody was poor, looking for resources, mm-hmm. as it is the day. So just remember, what goes around comes around. So, you know, but there are a lot of people that I recall, the close friends, most I notice, I, in fact, a fraternity brother's wife died, the paper this morning. I haven't seen Dick Ryden for years and years and years, but he was worthy master when I was at ATO, and his wife passed away just recently. And that, so those are those things that happen in life then trigger memories and appreciation of days gone by. So,
I guess, do you remember your graduation ceremony? Anything special about that day?
I can't remember who spoke or anything else, but I can remember that when they flipped the tassel from one side to the next, I remember the getting the diploma in a nice little padded booklet. I remember the congratulations I received from my professors that I mentioned previously that I admired and respected so much. When I got my master's, I really remember putting that hood over my neck and I said, pull it tight, pull it tight. I do know that the graduation was I don't know whether it was in the field house or where it is at the church. I can't recall, but it was either one of those two places. It was some years later Drake began to experiment with graduation, outdoor graduations, and then they had some inclement weather, I can't remember where they were held. I do know that I bought the quacks. And had, in fact, I just, when we moved just last spring, I brought all my quacks down and gave them to the alumni and development office just for their reference. So at the time I was at the university, my sister was here at the same time, and she was the organizing president of the Delta Zeta sorority at that time. So, but I guess the thing I remember as much as anything about was the pleasure that my folks got for me completing and the support and love of my wife. So,
what do you think the biggest difference is between when you went to Drake and today when, you know, students like me are here?
Oh, gosh.
What really stands out to you?
Well, probably the collegiate life today, from my perspective, and I've been involved with the university. I'm an originating member for the Ray Society, the lifelong learning program at the university. I helped create that. I currently serve as president. I've been active at the School of Education, and I was received their Alumni of the Year Award. I serve on the International Advisory Committee, and so I've been exposed to the university over the years in different forms. In that exposure, I've gotten to chances to speak with kids and interact with them at different times, in different occasions. What is expected of a high school kid today going to college, or a sophomore, or a junior, or a senior, is extremely different from what was expected of me. And even though I felt it was, at that time, was they expected too much, because I was too young and too immature. That doesn't mean that, I'm not implying that the learning experience and the teaching wasn't equally as good, if not better, than it is today. But Drake at that time was a very collegial environment. But I see the expectation laid on kids today, not only from your parents, your peers, the university, your own disciplines and your own wants and expectations. That's entirely different from what was laid on me. And I didn't get that until I laid it on myself when I came back from the Army. So and I think the kids today are really, from my impression, are very talented. They're very committed. They're good students for the most part. There's some that slack off, but vast majority. You look at the retention rate of the university today. You look at the graduation rate. You look at I was at this Drake. I was down to the Knapp Center here. 3 or 4 years ago, and they introduced all the athletes that made the dean's list, male and female. And do you know, I believe they introduced 270 kids on the dean's list that were in athletics at Drake University. My aching back. That impressed me. Of course, at that time, Drake is a non-scholarship football team, isn't it? They give scholarships, but it's a different, it's an academic scholarship, or it's not for becoming a pro football player. So it's a different, it's an indifferent environment entirely. The social, the cultural changes are so different. Mm-hmm. The economic conditions are so different. The pressure, the expectations are so different. So,
With that said, do you have any words of wisdom to offer freshmen, or, you know, what do you think is most important that they would know coming into college, I guess? Any words of wisdom, I guess, for us today in college?
Well, I think if I was going to share anything that might have a bit of value, you gotta give yourself time, and the universities need to give the kids time enough to be kids. There's a maturation and a growing process in life, and And even though there's a education today, it is really under the gun. Not so much in secondary or post-secondary education, but K-12 education is really getting whipped. They don't do anything right. They don't do this. They don't do that. But I wonder, where in the Sam Hill do all these scholars come from? Are they born at the university? Or were they developed and did they grow and were they guided through the public schools? But whatever the reason, kids today have such a high expectation that collegiate kids, most of them, and then not only of them by themselves, but everybody, students, parents, peers, and the future workplace. And I think that is really sometimes completely distorted for the value of kids and growing up. I think kids need time. Doesn't mean you're going to goof off, and doesn't mean you don't do your work, and doesn't mean you don't have a thing that you need to produce and be expected to do. But I'd be hopeful that there would be more time for kids to have. Now, maybe kids have more time than I think they do. And you would know this better than I do, but I just see all these expectations laid on kids. And then I see the debt the kids of the day absorb to get a school, to get a degree from college. And some of them, you know, gosh, they get, what, 30,000, 40,000, some even more? My gosh. And can you go out and can't even get a job for $10 an hour? So, but I think the kids got to give themselves some time to grow and become and emerge and let life come to them as much as they come, as they themselves come to life. And so, for what it's worth, I think the young people today have so much more potential. The world is an exciting place, I tell you. If you can't adjust and bend and roll and grow, you're going to stumble. You've got to be able to do that. And I would just be hopeful that through the learning process, the kids are beginning are learning to bend. Not break, but to bend and to grow and to be able to adjust to the multiplicity of expectations and adjust to and rise to the multiplicity of opportunity. It's out there. Seek it and you shall find.
All right. Well, that's good if that works for you. Thanks for letting me interview
you. Was that
it? Yeah, 45 minutes.
Was it 45?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I talk all the time, didn't I?
That's good, though.